It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Steve, my good man, how the devil are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm wonderful, my friend. The sun is shining. Cherise, dry February is over, so the beer has been flowing. And to top it all off, I had a literal cheesecake for breakfast. So I've had a really good day. You know you started the day well when you have a cheesecake for breakfast.
I've never had cheesecake for breakfast, but I'm feeling it could be the way forward.
You're really missing out, man, because it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, breakfast is the first meal of the day. Set yourself up well and have a treat meal. That's kind of the life advice I'm here to hand out today.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to get a cheesecake, and I'm going to have cheesecake for breakfast at the weekend, though.
At the weekend. Can't do it on a weekday. That's a bit too crazy.
That is a bit crazy, yeah. My breakfast time during the week now is like 5 in the morning. So,
that's fine. I mean, it doesn't have to be cheesecake, Steve. It could be whatever your favourite dessert is. And actually, cheesecake isn't my favourite dessert, but it was on sale, which is why I bought it. And then, you know, it was nearly out of date, so you had to eat it quickly. So, yeah.
Cheesecake on sale, mate. That's a no-brainer. Has to be bought and eaten.
Quite.
I don't know what I get. Oh, I don't know. Probably chocolate gâteau.
Is that your favourite dessert? Chocolate gâteau?
Maybe, yeah.
We're learning so much about each other, Steve. I don't actually know what my favourite dessert would be. Oh, I really don't. That's something to consider.
Yeah, there's so many nice ones out there.
Yeah. I like a good sticky toffee pudding, but...
That's exactly what I was about to say.
That's probably one of my favourites. Actually, there's the place not far from you, Recruiting Sergeant. When you get a sticky toffee pudding from there, it's about the size of your fist. It's great. It's like, oh...
Yeah, we've been there several times. The portions are huge. The food's good. The beer's really good in there as well.
And the prices are pretty reasonable.
They are. It's like where we live is a tourist hotspot, isn't it? So the prices are a bit high.
Yeah, generally.
But yeah, some places you find are pretty damn good. And I just like it.
Yeah, quite. Anyway, Steve, we're not here to discuss our favourite desserts or what I had for breakfast. We're here to talk about MotoGP and the news of what's been going on in the world of MotoGP. And then we'll dive into our predictions for the season, Steve. These are one of my favourite shows that we record, where we get to riff on the amazing things that could happen. And we often, stroke always, get it wrong.
Always, mate. That's a given. But I agree. This is one of my favourite shows. We just get to talk whatever we feel like and just go for it.
Exactly. And I'll try and stay a little bit more sober than in our last recording, eh?
Last week's show was pretty damn good. I enjoyed that. That was very fun.
It was a fun one. But I did, by the end of the show, I couldn't even say the name of the show. So it was quite embarrassing when I clicked the publish button, knowing that I was putting that out into the world.
It was a long, long show. It was a good show. I enjoyed it. But yeah, most of as we went on, it was like, Tim's fallen asleep.
I don't think I ever quite fell asleep, but after we finished recording, it was one of my friend's birthdays. So I jumped onto a Discord chat with a few friends and we played poker for a little while online and I carried on drinking for another few hours. And honestly, I don't know how much money I lost. I haven't checked my poker account balance because it's just embarrassing. I think I might have just essentially paid my friends to hang out with me for a few hours.
That's a different kind of service, mate.
Exactly. Right, so before we admit too much about that service, let's dive into the show, shall we?
Let's go for it, mate.
Good stuff. So, I'm Tim, he's Steve, and this is For the Love of MotoGP. So we've seen some team launches since our last recording, Steve. We'll run through those quickly, I think, to start with, and then we'll slide into the news a bit more from there. The first one we saw was the Pramac launch.
I didn't get to see the whole thing.
Okay.
I did quite like it. It felt a bit sort of strange because there was a lot of stuff going on.
Yes.
Different languages being spoken. It felt a bit sort of, whoa, what's happening here?
Yes.
Again, I like the leathers, but not much change with the bike again.
Yeah, I sort of feel the same way. Sort of the same way about it all, really. Like, the team launch was... It wasn't a KTM launch, was it? And I'm going to keep talking about it because the launch was great and the liveries are great. but it wasn't the KTM launch. It was a bit long. It was a bit boring. And it was a bit weird because it felt like they were doing a live performance, not performance, but like an in-studio, like with an audience. It felt like they were doing it properly, whereas the other teams clearly haven't felt like that because none of them have been doing it like that.
No, this did feel like a... almost like a soap opera. And at the end where you get the credits flash up filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, it did. It felt like that. It was, but it was fine. It worked. It was a bit long. It was a bit boring in places. I like the fact that everyone spoke their own language though. I think that made it flow much better. Like you say, it was a bit weird to start with because you're like, God, I know I'm reading subtitles, but I'm listening to them speak Italian, Spanish and French, and I'm a bit confused even though it's all the words are there. But I actually preferred that. It was less awkward than the weird Yamaha one where they were all forcefully speaking English and it felt very forced and fake.
It did make me feel very dumb. My simple lack of English, and then everyone's like rattling on in different languages and could clearly quite happily understand each other.
Yeah.
And there's me with my very subtle, useless English, not being able to even comprehend the slight word they're saying.
Steve, you can speak Norfolk better than most people in the country, right?
I being born and bred does have its advantages. I do try and embrace the Essex roots. I do like them spray tans, I do.
Oh God, that was a weird statement. That confused me a lot then. I think I'd quite enjoy it if you got a spray tan.
I've had a spray tan before.
You haven't.
I have.
That's my favourite thing.
In a booth, very awkward.
Oh, that's great. When was this?
Years and years ago.
Oh.
At the time, I did not want it. I remember really didn't want it, and I got a little bit sort of pushed into it because I was pasty white, as many Brits are. You know.
Do you have a photo of this?
No, thank God.
Oh, that's such a shame. I'd really like to see you with a spray tan, Steve. That would really kill me.
No, luckily, showing my age here, it was pre-camera phone.
Oh.
And I was in my 20s.
It's sort of a shame, Steve. I'd really like to see a photo of that.
It was not an experience I'll repeat, honestly.
Oh, dearie me. Well, there we go. We do know that if you ever get desperate, Steve, we know you can get a spray tan and you can look sharp just like that if you need to.
To be honest with you, when you washed it off, it was like a nice colour. I was like, wow, I've been on holiday without being anywhere, going anywhere.
The problem is the tan isn't the best bit of a holiday, is it? It's the actual holiday is the best bit. The tan is just a nice bonus afterwards.
That bronzing effect is just lovely. I just, like, years ago, I never used to wear sun cream. I was a bit of a dick. I remember going to Corfu when I was 20 for, like, a couple of weeks and coming back this weird colour because I got, like, tanned quite easily.
Yeah.
My dad had really nice, like, olive skin. And I've sort of got that same tanning effect. But then I burnt on top of having a tan and went this weird purple colour.
Ooh, yeah, purple's not a good colour to be.
No, it was like someone took a picture of me sitting down in a bar and you could see the purple twang.
That
kind of burnt red over brown was like, not a good look.
I'd be concerned about that. I think any time a human being is purple, something is not right.
Yeah, it obviously wasn't like bright purple.
It looked like you just hit the Vimto too hard.
Yeah, basically.
I kind of always wear sun cream now since that time in Portugal. You saw my sunburn. Came back. I'm always like a lizard, a bright red lizard. That was something
some
special.
Epic spray tan. It was like, there was a piece on your back, I remember looking at it, where you clearly burnt, but then it looked like you'd burnt on top of that burn.
Yeah.
So there was like multi layers of peeling blister. I was like, oh, Timmy.
It was maybe 8 weeks before my skin was anywhere near back to normal. It was, yeah, that wasn't good. But that's what you get for being an idiot and just laying on the beach when it's literally 38 degrees without putting sun cream on. Like, I obviously deserved that because I was being an idiot. So, you know, it hurt, but I learned a valuable lesson, Steve. Always wear sun cream or hide in
lube
shade. Lube up. Lube up. When you're on the beach surrounded by hundreds of strangers. I even got told off by a lifeguard on that trip, but we've taken a huge tangent, Steve. So being told off by a Portuguese lifeguard is not important.
That's what they're telling you off for.
Swimming. Actually, as it turned out, yeah. But I'm with you on the liveries for the Pramac team. I think that the actual livery, it's changed a little, but it's still that kind of that Pramac livery that we've had for the last few years, really. Ever since that, there was the big Octo Pramac livery, weren't there, when Scott Redding was on the bike.
Yeah.
Since that, they've kind of been the same kind of standard. It's not the same, but it's the same colours. It's not exciting, but I think the leathers this year are good.
The leathers are very good. On the bike, there's minimalistic changes. You know, it's a lot like Spot the Difference, which a lot of these, especially SRT, have been doing on social media quite a bit.
Okay.
You know, if you put the two bikes, the Pramac 2021 bike and 2020 next to each other, there's bits that are changed. And you can pick them out. You can see it. But if you just flashed past and looked at both in one go, you really couldn't tell the difference.
No, that's fair. I would imagine if I was sitting in the stands at a race and just watching them blast along a straight, I'd be like, Pramac bike, that's all I can tell you. Couldn't tell you which year it was.
No, that's it.
Yeah.
Unless you could actually stop it and have a look at the aero at the front, because that seems to be the only bit that's changing on most bikes, is like the aero.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. It's all the same.
Yep, exactly. And you've just mentioned the Petronas bike there with its Spot the Difference. So let's dive into their team launch. This team launch I really enjoyed. It was actually longer than the Pramac launch, I think.
It was, yeah.
I love the fact, though, that Raslan Razali, the team boss, was presenting it. It was this kind of... Every other team launch has felt like this, oh, let's get a presenter in, let's do it properly, let's be a bit posh. Petronas were like, Raslan can do it, that's fine. And I think he was good. I really enjoyed that. It felt quite down to earth compared to the others. And it was very obviously a virtual launch. He kept saying it's a virtual launch all the way through it. It was very obvious a virtual launch. He's there with this nice CGI background behind him. None of this, let's put a pit garage and a racetrack bollocks behind him. It was clearly a CGI background and supposed to be that. Nothing else.
I agree. Completely agree. It didn't look forced.
Mm.
You know, like you said, a lot of the others have. Look, this was very down to earth, very natural feel to it.
Yes.
Especially having Raslan do it, it gave it a real team feel as well.
Yeah,
didn't
exactly.
Feel like an award ceremony kind of thing. This felt like a real team effort, which was quite nice.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's part of what I enjoyed about it. And then it shot back and forth, didn't it? We spoke to a few people. We spoke to Wilco Zeelenberg, obviously the team manager. Spoke to, I can't remember what she was, a marketing director of Petronas or something.
I can't remember.
But that was a shot in the Petronas towers. You could see like the walkway between the two towers behind her just for that glitz and glamour look. But it was good. I enjoyed it. And it's strange here because we've criticised the Yamaha launch for all being in English and it being quite weird and forced. Now, this launch was also all in English, yet it felt smooth. It felt like everyone kind of wanted to be there speaking English as opposed to being forced to be there and speak English.
Yeah, this did feel far more natural. It felt like everyone was more comfortable just in what they were doing, whereas others, it felt like they were probably told to do it that way. This one felt like everyone involved had made the choice to do it this way.
Yes, certainly.
Sorry, mate.
I was going to say the bit that really tickled me was how when we spoke to the different riders from the different series, he spoke to the Moto3 riders, spoke to the Moto2 riders, spoke to the MotoGP riders, all riding for the Petronas teams.
it was very clear where the money went in those ones, because like the Moto3 riders seemed to be just sitting in front of their laptops, not even with a proper webcam, just the little webcam on top of the laptop. A bit grainy, a bit shitty. You get to Moto2 and they're sitting in their own chairs all of a sudden. They're still at home, but it's a slightly nicer home. The camera quality is slightly nicer. It looked much better. And then we got to like MotoGP and we're talking to like Rossi and Morbidelli and it's just like 4K. Like it really tickled me. You could see where they'd thrown the money for their quick interview snippets.
I completely agree. It was that really did show the Moto3 one. I was expecting someone to just like walk in from the background.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like how you and I record. Like I kind of expected like John McPhee's mum just to come in waving behind him.
Yeah. Little brother going past the background.
Exactly.
Oh dear, yeah. That would be funny.
But the livery on that, what do we think about the Petronas SRT livery, or PSRT as they keep referring to themselves as now?
Yes, I don't know, suddenly drop a P in there, why not?
Well, I mean, it's just to get rid of Petronas, isn't it? So we are the Petronas Sepang Racing Team, but I quite like PSRT, just very quick and snappy. I'd never heard it before, but they did it a lot in this launch.
Yeah, I think it was probably, they did it a lot to sort of drum it in.
Yeah,
because all of a sudden it's just like we're going to be PSRT. Let's get it out there.
Yeah, exactly. This is what we're called now. This is all the branding. This is what's going to be on the hats.
Yeah, very much like when we plug our Facebook group that we set up.
Oh, is this a plug for the Facebook group, Steve?
This could be a plug for the Facebook group.
It's a plug for the Facebook group. So if you guys want to come and join us in the Facebook group where we can discuss all of the team launches as we have been doing, come over to Facebook. We are the For the Love of MotoGP community. So come and join us. It'll be great.
Have a chat. Discuss stuff.
Exactly. That was a smooth plug, Steve. I enjoyed it.
Did you like that one?
I did.
I thought we were going to drop it in early. Get it in there early.
But yes, the livery anyway. What are we thinking about the livery?
Again, not much of a change, apart from Rossi's additions. Morbidelli side of things, very simple, very much the same. Gone a bit more sort of sheen metallic this year compared to years previous, which I quite like. I like the way they're sort of evolving it. Then you come across the other side of the garage and you've got that obvious Rossi influence.
But only really on the leathers, because the Rossi bike, like the bikes are almost identical. It seems to be... It's only really the leathers that have got the Rossi yellow all over them.
Yeah, there's a little bit on the bike, a tiny, tiny bit. And I think that's probably Petronas saying, no, you can have your bit on your leathers.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You can have the yellow 46 and you can have the pictures of your pets near your bum, but that's all you're having.
Yeah, because some things are like synonymous with some riders. And like Rossi's leg colours, Son of the Moon, the pets on the back, they go wherever he goes.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a similar deal if you go back and look at the early Ducati that he was on. It's almost identical where he had stuff placed.
Yeah, and it has been full stop, hasn't it? But the Ducati he was on, I think, was a bit... He had a heavy influence in that because his Ducati and Nicky Hayden's Ducati were very different machines. They looked very different. And I think the Rossi one always looked a bit shit.
It did look a bit shit. It did look a bit shit. But that was then. This is now.
Yeah.
I quite like it. I like the whole combination of Rossi and Morbidelli. I think they actually look really good together.
Mm.
I think they make a good couple.
I think they make a lovely couple, Steve.
Yes. Yeah, I think you can have a bit of competition, mate.
It's okay. They're just bros. They're just best bros. Right. So there's no way that Rossi is going to be trying to steal Morbidelli from me.
Rightio. I'll let him know. Just pan left.
God, I'd be like, what the fuck? How have we got 17 minutes into the show, Steve, and that you're only just telling me now that he's there? But no, I think you're right. I think the Morbidelli livery and like leathers is fine. It looks a bit nicer actually than last year's, I think.
Yeah.
But I do think the Rossi leathers, I was worried there'd be too much yellow. I thought it would look like the Ducati, like he'd forced too much of his image onto the machine. But actually, I think it's good. I think the best bits are his legs. I didn't really think I'd be saying I love Rossi's legs. But with the Petronas team, I do think the boots and the yellow markings on the leathers really work. I think they look really, really good.
Yeah, the whole Petronas sort of colour of, I don't know, is it teal? Sort of green?
Teal or turquoise or
something. Whatever that combination is. And the yellow actually go really well together.
I didn't think they would. I thought they would look really, really bad.
Yeah, but no, it's kind of, they've pulled it off, and it does look nice.
Yeah, it does indeed. I do think, though, that the actual livery, like we said, it looks very similar to last year's, pretty much. I still like the first Patronus livery from what would be 2019. I think that was the best. It wasn't the block colour. It was kind of almost metallic. It was nice. I really, really liked that. But, you know, I'm also not Patronus, who's paying a shitload of money to have my branding all over the bike. So I can understand why they wanted to be more obvious.
I'm a little disappointed with all these teams that haven't made more changes this year. Because, you know, we've seen a lot of change of riders and teams and everything this year. And I thought there'd be a few more stamps sort of placed on these bikes. Just a bit more of a shake-up. You know, with everyone swapping around, like Pole going to HRC, I thought there might be a few tweaks. Rossi going to PSRT. got it in there. Much like the Facebook group. Hey.
Oh God.
I thought we might see a few more little tweaks. Not much, just little tweaks for these people to like signal that there's a change happened and this is how we're gonna show it. But obviously none of them got the LSD out and just stuck to what they know.
That's it. I think a lot of it's actually budget. I think the COVID kind of fucked all of the teams full stop. And although Dorna did help them out and a lot of the teams have got backing from elsewhere, I guess like Patronus probably still have a shitload of money. Repsol still have a shitload of money. Monster still have a shitload of money. So there's money flowing in. But some of the teams are going to be struggling more. So, you know, why spend a shitload of money on designers and on completely redoing your livery when you can just take bits from last year and just stick them on? Like, I could have probably just gone in and just did a quick Photoshop job. Happy days. Pay Tim a tenner. Done.
Yeah, I completely agree. Although, like I say, these massive companies have got plenty of money in the bank. They're not going to spend it willy-nilly in this kind of climate if they don't have to.
Yeah,
they're going to keep it in the bank for a rainy day, and this is not a rainy day. You can just make minimalistic changes, everyone's happy, boom, done.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I guess it's good for branding as well, like the Repsol, because we kind of slate Repsol Honda especially for never changing. Like, oh God, when did that livery change? Maybe when Marc Marquez got on the bike, it got a bit more white and a bit less black. But that's kind of about it. It's not changed much in a lot of years. But it would also upset me a little bit if it did change. I sort of slate them, but it's the ultimate branding for it not to change because they're synonymous with one another now. The Repsol colours on that Honda, they're one and the same, and it would be a big shock. It's a very good branding exercise. I think the same in Formula One with the Red Bull car. The Red Bull car hasn't really changed for a long time now. It's always just been Red Bull.
And,
you know, so it's a very good branding exercise.
Yeah, and if you go, like for us in the UK, if we go abroad and you see a Repsol garage, you instantly think MotoGP, Honda.
I do. I remember being in Spain and I saw, I can't even remember what they're called now, the radio station that sponsors the Pons Moto2 machines.
Oh my God.
The 40-something, it's radio frequency is something 4.0. Alex Rins rode the 40 bike, and they always ride a 40 bike in that team because that's the sponsor. And when I saw the radio station, I was like, Moto2.
Yeah, it works. It works. Because like you say, some things are just synonymous and you pick it out. Your brain subconsciously sees it and remembers it.
Yeah, I did the same with Movistar now, actually. Movistar, so we don't have Movistar in the UK. But whenever I see Movistar, I'm like, oh, Yamaha. Like, I do. Yeah. And they're not even sponsored by Movistar now, but I still make that connection.
Exactly. It works. If you're good at marketing, advertising, and branding, you can, and you can find a niche and hit it properly, you can make a lot of money out of it.
Yeah, exactly. So during the Patronus launch, there was the chat for the media with Raslan afterwards. We were not invited to this, obviously, but no. we've obviously been reading about it and watching bits and bobs here and there. Interestingly, that Raslan sort of revealed that the Patronus SRT team or PSRT team. No, just PSRT, because the T stands for team. That's confusing. That's like saying ATM machine. The M is already machine. You don't need to say it. Or or pin number. You don't need to say it. The N is for number. Anyway, tangent. Raslan revealed that PSRT are going, will probably be the Yamaha satellite team for next year.
Yeah.
He said, and I quote, they already have the first draft proposal for the next 5 years from Yamaha, end quote. And they also, quote, hope to complete everything by May or June this year, end quote.
Right. Which kind of wraps up a rumour.
Yeah, it kind of does. And it's a bit sad that the rumour's over already. It's been a fun rumour and I'm a bit upset. And I'm hoping we'll, maybe this is just a little joke and a little laugh and we'll get more Suzuki rumours coming out. Or not Suzuki, VR46 rumours coming out of it. But it certainly does sound like, doesn't it, that could be done now. It's pretty much,
yeah.
It's pretty much over. And we were thinking we'd know pretty soon. And May or June really actually aren't that far away now.
No, they're not. Be nice if June was here, we'd all be out of lockdown, but
yeah, well, we can hope, but
live in hope. But yeah, it does sound like the
the Patronus Sepang, mash them together, we get the Patrang team
will be staying with Yamaha for the next 5 years potentially.
Yeah.
So yeah, this kind of slams the door on the VR46 effort.
It does. So where do VR46 go from here, Steve?
Suzuki.
Seems to be, doesn't it? Or do they end up running a full factory or a full third-tier Ducati team?
I think it's got to be Suzuki. Oh, I really God. Do.
Or it's Aprilia's.
Can you imagine if they chucked everything they had at Aprilia?
Well, I mean, it's an Italian team.
That would fill a niche. If they're going full-bore I can't speak tonight now. Aprilia factory. If they could get a big sponsor in the background like VR46.
I've just had a thought, Steve.
Oh.
Who are Aprilia's big sponsor?
Silence. I don't know.
It's Sky.
It is Sky. Ooh. Interesting.
Yeah. So obviously the Sky bikes on the grid this year will be the Aprilia machines. Assuming they're still Sky, I don't know. We'll find out in a couple of days. But assuming it's still Sky, there's going to be the Sky VR46 machine and the Sky Aprilia machines.
So amalgamate all that into one happy family.
Maybe.
Oh, that would be an interesting setup.
At the same time, we know Marco Bezzecchi turned down a factory Aprilia ride.
Yes.
And this is something that's going to be in the works for a while. So would he have done that if he just knows he's going to end up on an Aprilia anyway?
Unless there was a delay put in place while early negotiations were going on. They weren't 100% sure because they were waiting to see what Yamaha did with Patronus.
Potentially. Oh, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with VR46. I'm sort of a bit excited if they end up... They can't end up as like the primary Ducati satellite team because that's Pramac. No. It would be a real dick move for everyone involved for Pramac just to be booted to the curb at this point.
That would be awful. But at the same time, I would really like to see Ducati only have 4 bikes on the grid and 4 Suzukis and 4 Aprilias.
And arguably that can happen, can't it? If we know the Gresini squad are going to be an independent team again, away yes. from being the Aprilia factory team. So if they end up running Aprilia satellite machines and VR46 end up running Suzukis, which I do think is more likely, conspiratorial postulating over the VR46 bikes being Aprilias just because they have the same sponsor, I think that's less likely. But you never know. It could be fun.
That'd be interesting.
But that would then do it, wouldn't it? Everyone would have 2 factory machines, 2 satellite teams, job done. Dorna's got what they want.
Exactly. That's what it needs to be in my eyes. We need 4 of each manufacturer, primary and satellite team. Everyone's got a main sponsor. Everyone's happy.
Mm.
World's in harmony on the MotoGP grid.
And the cool thing is now we're in a period of MotoGP where being actually on a satellite machine doesn't mean you're on second tier machinery. It doesn't mean you're going to be finishing behind the factory teams. We saw it last year over and over again. The satellite teams won races. Satellite teams riders were finishing ahead in the championship of factory riders on the same machines. We're in a really good position of MotoGP right now, where it's a really hyper competitive field, there is arguably only one team in 2021 that are not on really good spec machinery compared to their factory.
Yeah, absolutely. Be interesting to see how this plays out. We say this every week. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
And there's always another twist every week. Like, there's another twist.
Yeah, exactly. okay, let's go keep moving on, shall we, Steve? We've got two more launches to go through, and then we've seen all of the bikes for the year. We have the Aprilia launch on March 4th.
There you are.
I'm glad you managed to find that, because I searched for ages. I didn't. I Googled quickly. I had a look at a couple of articles and everything said to be confirmed. And then I spoke to you and you, bang, you knew it. You were like, it's March 4th. It's 1:30 GMT. I was like, whoa, where the fuck have you got this from?
YouTube.
Yeah, quite. YouTube told you. So happy days. That's that one. And then 2 days after that is the Suzuki launch on March 6th.
That's it. Job done. We know what we've got.
Yeah, quite. I did see, actually, I heard a lot of, I don't want to throw shade at anyone here, but I heard a lot of professional journalists complaining that team launches were on a Saturday. And they work enough Saturdays during the year, and they don't want to see the team launches on a Saturday, because it means they have to work on a Saturday during the off-season. And I think that by complaining, and I find this is a bit of a problem with a few journalists anyway, that it's very woe is me. It's very, my life is very hard because I get to do this amazing job where I get to follow MotoGP around and report on it and get paid to do it. And it's so difficult. And I'm a bit over that, because the teams, in the way I'm kind of viewing it, is the teams are doing this. They're releasing it on a Saturday because none of the fucking fans are at work.
Yeah.
So the fans can watch. Like, it's sort of a get over yourself and think about the bigger picture here. It's for the fans. It's not for you. It's literally your job. Work on a Saturday if you have to, you get Monday to Thursday off.
Yeah. You take away the fans, you take away the money that the fans spend on MotoGP and MotoGP related products. Googling stuff, putting money into the internet by just Googling stuff. Like we do lots.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not being funny or anything, guys, but you're reporting on a sport that for 99% of its coverage runs on a weekend.
Yeah.
Shut up.
And I'm sure, to be fair, Steve, there is literally no, probably very few professional reporters listening to this show at all, because they actually have proper reporting to do with their time, not just listening to you and I chat shit. But it kind of riled me a little bit, and I just wanted to talk about it.
I did see some of the same articles that you have, and a lot of me thinks, just shut up.
Yeah. It's not a good look, is it? It's not a good look. Because I think that most fans will read it and think what you and I think. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You've got the job we could all want. Like, we all want the job that you've got.
I'd love to be a good enough writer to spend my time solely writing about MotoGP, following it around, having access that they have. I'd love access to, like, the to Razlan's press conference after the launch. And what I wouldn't give for that. Just to sit there, listen to his words, and then have the time to sit and type it up.
Yeah, quite.
You know, our lives are completely different. We go to work 5 days a week, and then we still find time to do a podcast. We don't moan about that.
No, exactly. And to be fair to them, like, there is a certain amount of skill involved in that writing. Like, it's not that they just fluked into this job. There's a lot of hard work that's involved. There's a lot of skill that's involved in it. But you're also in a very fortunate position to be able to do it. So it's one of those, I think, I don't know. I just think there are certain journalists that kind of just need to maybe think about what they're saying every now and again, because it is a turn off for a lot of listeners. But let's just move it on, Steve. Moto E testing started today, Steve. I'll be honest with you. I have not had a chance to catch up on it because I've been digging trees up. So
yes, I've been at work. And I also haven't had time to catch up on it yet. I did see some snippets on Instagram earlier. The bike's on track. They look awesome. You put in the notes that Yoni Hernandez is back.
This kind of surprised me. It wasn't only when I was on MotoGP.com earlier. And I was like, whoa, Yoni Hernandez. I haven't seen him on the MotoGP grid or in the MotoGP paddock since, what, 2014? 2013?
Yes. somewhere around that time. It was roughly around the Marquez time.
Yeah.
And he's back. I'm really happy about that. But I did see that Dominic Agata has topped today's test.
Okay.
So he's come out on top. All the bikes are really good. I've always liked the Moto E bikes.
I enjoy Moto E, and I mean, we've spoken about it before, Steve. I think you and I are both convinced that electric vehicles, full stop, are the future of at least everyday vehicles, and I'm pretty sure electric is the future of racing as well.
Absolutely, I completely agree. I've had my doubts whether we'll ever see like the hybrid style of bikes becoming the pinnacle, like we've got in Formula One at the minute with the hybrid engines.
Yeah, I don't think we will. I don't think a hybrid works in a motorbike. There's just not enough room.
No, I think we'll see the development come along for the Moto E. And then one day, I think we'll just see this transition where more people, especially the younger people now, because they're going to be brought up with Moto E a little bit more, are going to sort of follow that. It's going to become really popular, and we're going to see the shift.
Hmm. And it's also people who use... We've got to remember as well that the MotoGP is aiming itself at the emerging markets at the moment. A lot in Asia, where a huge, huge motorcycle market is. And the only people until very, very recently that I knew that rode electric mopeds or small capacity, in inverted commas, motorbikes, electric ones, were all in Asia. They'd be in China or in Indonesia. So that's where that market is as well. And that's the market that's exploding at the moment. And that will continue to do so. So that's going to be where the future of vehicles that we will all be riding eventually is. And that's also the future of the fan base.
Absolutely. You see on social media all the time, like new motorcycle manufacturers are releasing new electric bike designs all the time. Harley Davidson had just released one of theirs.
Harley Davidson did the electric bikes that Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman used for the long way up.
Yeah. Charlie's always sort of put stuff on Instagram. He's out riding that bike. But they're all asset. All the manufacturers now are jumping on the bandwagon, and like the infrastructure just worldwide, we saw it in Long Way Up. Harley Davidson and I forget which other company was put in the charging ports all the way up the journey, didn't they, in the first leg?
Oh god, yeah, they did. Who was the company? I want to say like OXM or something, but it wasn't.
No, something along that line. But anyway, they put the infrastructure in, and that's the bit we need, more infrastructure as things, and that will come.
Yeah, it certainly will do.
But yeah, every bike manufacturer, I'd like to have a go on an electric bike just to see what it's all about.
Yeah, I would really like to have a go. It's that kind of the instant torque, isn't it? Like, there's no torque curve. It's just on or off the switch. Yeah. There's no revs. It's just go stop.
Yeah, but for an oldish petrol head like myself, it's a bit of a taboo as well.
It really is a taboo. And I'm sure there'll be people listening to this that think exactly the same. They're like, no, electric motorbikes, we don't want.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm cheating on Bert. I should clarify, Bert is my motorbike. Okay.
Not the weird nickname you've got for Sarah.
No. Bert is my motorbike. Bert the BSO.
Was it Energica?
It could have been Energica, actually.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did some great work in South America, didn't they? Put in loads and loads of charge points. So they had somewhere to charge the bikes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It is the future. There's a long way to go yet before it's mainstream, but it's coming.
Yeah, it's certainly coming, and it sort of has to come. Sadly, our days are very, very numbered.
How many Teslas do you see out now?
A lot, actually.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Teslas kicking about. Teslas help that they're a status symbol as well, though, don't they? Like, as Tesla is a sign of wealth in the same way as any kind of high-end car is. But I'm sort of at this point, while I get quite annoyed when I see people flouting their wealth around, I'm also quite happy to see people flouting their wealth around if it's in an eco-friendly way. So
yeah,
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I quite like it. I do. There's someone in town who's got one of the Tesla 4x4s, SUVs, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And the thing looks nuts. I'm not into the futuristic kind of looking cars, but this thing looks crazy. I like it.
Yeah, well, there's... at least four or five Teslas on the industrial estate in town.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see him there in the day. But this is Bike Steve and not Cars, so let's keep moving, shall we? Mika Kallio, obviously the KTM test rider, has broken his leg in an ice road racing crash in Finland. Have you seen this crash?
Yes. To start with, it looks really
tame. He literally stayed on the bike. It's only when he got off the bike after it came to a complete standstill and he stepped off it that he looked like he was in pain.
Yeah. I was like, I saw the first thing you see is like the picture of the x-ray and you can see the brake and then it shows the clip and I was like, well, what did he do?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah. No idea how he did that, but yeah, hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, well, like, I guess for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's on his Instagram, so you can see it. Mm. And it's not one of the, I'm not someone that's going to go and tell you to go and watch a terrible crash where someone really gets hurt, because I am, like I think most of us are, especially if you ride a motorcycle, very, very turned off by big crashes. Like, these crashes are scary, scary things. But this isn't really even a crash, is it? He's blasting along on the ice.
It's a weird one.
And he kind of misjudges it. The back slips slightly. And then rather than make it around the corner, he jumps up the ice bank and then he's in the snow a little bit. And then he stops and he's still upright and he gets off and almost collapses in pain. So I can only assume when he hits the snowbank, the force that he's then forced up through his foot pegs and up through his legs just was enough to break his tib and fib. But it looked painful. Like when he got off, he looked like he was in some serious pain.
It did look bloody nasty. I mean, I saw him come to a stop and I was like, he looks all right. My first thought was when like he was riding along, I thought the bike fell on him.
That's sort of what I assumed was going to happen. But then I was like, but if he's posted this on his Instagram, it's not going to be a terrifying crash, is it?
It's not going to be horrific. And then he gets off and you can see he's in pain. I was like, oh. I think it was, is it percussive shock, which is like the impact fracture?
You get such force. That would make sense, but I've got no idea.
I think it's percussive shock. Like if you want to hit a bolt and loosen it, you give it a good smack, and I think that's percussive shock. And I think that's the same sort of terminology used for an impact fracture on the bottom, like anything.
Okay.
I think. Don't quote me. I'm no doctor.
We'll go with it, Steve. You sound like you know what you're talking about. That is the important thing here.
I'll find out tomorrow. I'll go whack someone with something at work.
Like, is that percussive shock? Bam!
That's it. He's in pain. Medic!
But yeah, Mika Kallio is going to be out for about 6 to 8 weeks. He had no official test role in Qatar coming up, which I guess is pretty lucky, all things considered. I mean, he probably doesn't give a shit at the moment while he's healing. He probably doesn't care what's lucky and what's not. But I guess for KTM, it's quite lucky.
Yeah, for them. If he had been at their test role, it would have been...
Yeah, but it does look like he's probably going to miss out some of the private testing that they had sorted in Europe. So I can't imagine it's going to be a big hit for KTM, really. Like, Mika Kallio has done a very, very good job for KTM. He's done a lot of the grunt work in the testing. He will put the miles in. He'll test the parts. He then hands the parts over to Danny Pedrosa, who really does that kind of the fine tuning. So they will certainly miss him, but I don't think it's going to derail there. It's not like if they'd have gone and lost Danny Pedrosa, I would be a little worried that it might derail their 2021 campaign. But I don't think losing Mika Kallio for a couple of months is going to derail the campaign. It could do, but I don't think it's likely.
No, not when you got like Pedrosa's caliber in there. If, like you say, if it wasn't Pedrosa and it was not such an accomplished rider who spent so much time in MotoGP and knows what's required, then... Yeah, that probably would have had ramifications on what happens in the future. But you've got arguably the runner-up for God knows how many years, the person who should have won it multiple times but never did. You know, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And arguably, if they need someone to fulfill that kind of the mule role, to be able to ride fast, really fast, but just test parts reliability, see which parts feel okay and don't feel okay, Bradley Smith seems to be... moment, so you know, maybe there's they'll go down that path, get Bradley back on board.
Or if you get really stuck, we're available.
I can stay upright, so that's good.
I would certainly be able to test like the integrity of the seat with my ass nipping up on it.
Have you ever ridden with a race shifter before, Steve?
No,
me neither. I think I'd probably crash pretty quick. I'd get confused as to what up and what's down in the gearbox.
Mate, I rode old bikes. I'd be dabbing the back brake all the time.
Yeah, that's fair.
My gears are swapped.
Yeah, that's a good point. I kind of forgot about that. So you're even further removed from a race shifter.
If I flick it with my left foot, I'm breaking.
So I actually started watching some ice racing after hearing about Mika Kallio, because I'd never really watched it before. And it's sort of everything I expected, big spiked tyres. And I sort of expected it to be a lot like Speedway, where it's just one circle, because I've seen like ice Speedway before. But it wasn't. It was like a proper track, but it's like they've got the flat track riding style, but just on ice.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of it, like snippets here and there. And it is like a proper track. And
yeah.
It looks, I would not want to give it a go. And I would not want to get a punt off one of those tyres with all those spikes in it.
No, certainly not, man. And like, they're riding close. And they are riding close. When they're doing their overtake stuff, they're not MotoGP close. But it's also not like motocross. Like, they're getting close. Like, there's certainly some rubbing involved.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to take a hit off that front tyre if you're going around a corner.
You wouldn't want to take a hit full stop from any of them. It's like, and even when you slap the ice, it's going to hurt. I guess the only thing is, when you come off and hit the ice and the snow, at least you slide. You're going to dissipate a lot of that force with the slide. It's not an instant whack like on motocross. You're not just going to hit mud and stop. You're going to slide. So there's a probably actually less chance for injury doing ice road racing than there is doing standard road racing and motocross and stuff.
This is probably true. You'd be bloody cold by the time you come to a standstill, though, wouldn't you?
I bet you wouldn't even. I bet you'd be roasting because you're shitting a brick as you're sliding along there.
Normally, if you come off like on a road race, you're going to lose. You're going to knock off your speed fairly quick. This way, you're going to gain speed. But you imagine all the snowballs you could have by the time you stopped.
It's just like, if you had like the forethought and the skill to be crashing and still lobbing snowballs at the crowd, that would be incredible.
That'd be amazing. Get to the end, the marshals come over, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Have that.
Oh, dear. But yeah, it's very good. I will drop a link to some ice road racing into the show notes if you guys want to check it out. It's certainly worth a watch.
Have a look. It is amazingly scary.
Yeah, quite. Right, Steve, the intro news section has been much longer than I expected. So let's you and I take a quick break and then we'll dive properly into our prediction show, shall we?
Let's do that.
Good stuff. Right, guys, bear with us for a moment. We will be right back with our predictions for the year.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Thank you very much for bearing with us there, guys. We're back. I got a new fresh can of Coke to go with the port that is currently finding its way very quickly down my throat. And Steve urinated, so life is good.
It's all good, and I topped up my juice.
There we are, hardcore. Not with the urine, I assume.
No. Didn't make that mistake again.
Right.
No, I don't do that. Got all Bear Grylls again.
You'll be peeing in a snake skin and just carrying it everywhere with you next.
Oh, Jesus, no.
Right, anyway, before Steve starts admitting strange urination habits of his, let's dive into the show. I think, Steve, before we dive into this year's predictions, I was looking over last year, and it just, once again, after I kind of read the basic facts, I realised last year was fucking bonkers. And I last just want to go over it again.
Yeah, I read when you sent me the notes earlier on. I've read this bit and I was just like, Jesus, that is a lot of statistics and a lot of nuts statistics in there as well.
Exactly. That juice is really hitting you hard, man.
Some things I cannot pronounce sometimes.
And juice. Actually,
that's quite hard, isn't it?
Statistics is, yeah, it's getting to me. I'm a third of a bottle of port in, so that's fine. Anyway, let's go for it, man. So we had 9 different winners across the year. 5 of those were first-time winners. 1 of them was a rookie.
Satellite Team scored 8 wins. 6 of those were for the PSRT, and 2 were for the Tech 3 Yamaha. No,
they're not Tech 3 Yamaha anymore, are they? Oh, hey, the Tech 3 KTM squad.
Yamaha factory squad only scored a single win. Repsol Honda, and actually Honda as a whole, didn't score a single win. The Ducati as a whole scored 2 wins, 1 each for their factory riders. Suzuki only scored 2 wins. And the KTM factory scored 1, giving KTM 3 wins in total. It's just a weird year, man.
That's almost like a complete normality reversal.
Yeah, and we'll continue through this. There was 15 different riders on the podium. Ducati won the Constructors' Crown for the first time since 2007. Suzuki crowned a Riders' Champion for the first time since Kenny Roberts Jr. in the year 2000. Johan Mir won the title, only winning 1 race. It was a mental year, Steve.
It was awesome, mate. But it leads me on to a little worry. Mm-hmm. Anything less this year is going to seem sedate.
Well, will it? Because no. Do you remember 2016? We had 9 different winners. We had a lot of podium, standers, a lot of podium winners. I don't know. What do you call that? A lot of people stood on the podium in 2016. But the year was kind of dominated by Marc Marquez. Mm. And yet we all kind of look back on it like, oh, the year with 9 winners. Wow, 2016. So I don't know. I think this year probably won't be quite as exciting as the stats I've just reeled off. But actually, there's a real chance it could be as good. It could be as exciting.
I think we're in for a hell of a year. I really do. There's a lot of things have happened in the off season which are in people's sort of to watch lists. Mm. There's a lot of things people are going to be keeping an eye on because they want to see. You know, the whole Marcus debacle as you're coming back. Just bits. There's whole little bits. Rossi at Petronas, what's he going to do? Pole at Honda, what's he going to do? Everyone's keeping their eyes in different places.
Yeah, and that's become very evident, actually. We've been chatting to people, and this one isn't even a plug, Steve, but we've been chatting to people in the Facebook group, and people are quite excited about different things, like you say. Yeah. People are excited to see whether Pole does well. People are excited to see how Valentino Rossi does on a satellite machine. Like, there's a lot of things people are looking forward to. The Jack Miller, Pecco Bagnaia combo, brand new guys in the big red team riding the Ducatis. Like, there's a lot to look forward to, and people are looking forward to very different things. I think it's an exciting year for a lot of people for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's so much going on this year, more so than we've had in some years previous. There's so much to look forward to, and it's MotoGP. Even if it's bad, it's still bloody awesome. And we'll still be talking about it, and we can fill 2-hour shows easily. It's always good. It's never bad.
Mm.
And whatever happens, we will still be here watching it week in, week out with the same enthusiasm as a 7-year-old kid on Christmas Eve.
That's fair. Has there ever been a time where you've watched MotoGP and gone, fuck, this is a boring year?
No.
Nah, that's fair. Because even the years where the championship has been boring, and there's been a number of those in the last 5 years, there's been a number of years where the championship is pretty boring. But race by race, weekend by weekend, it's exciting. And arguably, there's been times where it's the other way, where race by race, it's been pretty dull. But the championship has been exciting.
Exactly. Let's look at Marquez's dominating year, where he won just absolutely everything. And run away with every race at the front. We didn't see him.
2019.
Yeah. We didn't see him because the camera then pans back and race direction shows you the action happening elsewhere, which is still good.
Yeah.
You know, you get the odd flick to Marquez at the front. Oh, yeah, he's still there. Leave him alone. Watch these guys. So the race in there is still really good. If we were to just watch one guy circulating around a track, it'd be pretty damn dull.
I don't know if that's true, because you've got to also think of, like, the years, say, 2012, when Lorenzo dominated. No, because that's a bit different, because he was really fighting with Pedrosa. But in those races where Lorenzo does dominate, there's also something quite mystical about watching Lorenzo. Like, he's that silky, smooth riding style. There was something, even when he was crushing it and he was 10 seconds in front of everyone, it was still fantastic to watch.
Yeah, I do agree. You could sit and watch that style of racing all day long. Mm. There's no one that can make shapes like Marquez.
Yeah, exactly. That's another really the polar opposite, actually, of what I was just describing. But yeah, like Lorenzo is taking it in silky smooth, every corner hitting every marker. And then you get Marquez, who's just going like sliding the bike around all exactly. over the place, making some crazy shapes, like you say, like doing things on her bike that no living person should be able to do. Even though he's got a 15-second lead over everyone, he still seems to be taking these insane risks.
Exactly. But race direction will always think, right, action, what's happening? You know, and they'll always pan to the next group. So they will sort of make that decision for you. You're going to watch this. This is what we're telling you to watch.
Yeah.
They'll scatter around. If there's a runaway leader, they tend to sort of follow everyone else. And then just flash back to them. So you're always treated to like what they deem is the best of the action. And 99% of the time, they're right.
Yeah.
We have got options depending on where you're watching in the world. If you're watching on video pass, you can choose a different camera.
Mm.
So you can pick who you're watching, which is pretty damn good. I mean, like that.
And you get that cool 360 cam on a few riders. That's a good one.
Literally then going for. I got some shots on Tacker's bike last year. I think Jack Miller following him. And it was just incredible. It looks 360 camera wide angle that looks a bit further away than what it does.
Yeah.
Or actually is.
I bet it would be amazing if you had a VR headset though.
Oh shit, that'd be good.
Yeah.
I think you might have just hit something on the head there, mate. I'll have to get one of those.
I wonder, but one of the guys that's here has got the PlayStation VR headset. I wonder if I could get that
working with
the 360 cam. Oh, God. Well, that gives me a fucking project, doesn't it? That'd be exciting.
Know what you're doing for the next 4 weeks to race.
He's just going to come in and be like, are you watching VR porn? And be like, no, it's MotoGP, I swear.
Oh, dearie me. But whatever happens, it's MotoGP. It's always going to be good.
Yeah, there's not really been... I think we are quite... Well, I am certainly quite lucky in the fact that I came into MotoGP probably in its weakest years. When I first started watching, it was 2011. There weren't many bikes on the grid. But since then, it's only got better. So I think I started in the doldrums of MotoGP, and it's only improved to what arguably I think we'll look back on, Steve, as this is the golden era of MotoGP.
Yeah. We've said it before, we are being spoiled at the minute with what we get in MotoGP. We've never had such a talented grid. We've never had such close racing. So much to look forward to. You know, there's little battles within battles. And the talent that is going to come through, it's just going to be incredible.
Yeah.
We are really starting to ride that first crest of this wave where it's just going to be astonishing.
Yes, exactly, Steve. You can't be talking about waves anymore either, Steve, because that has pandemic connotations these days. So So let's not talk about peaks or waves. Let's keep ploughing on, Steve. It's our predictions for the year. What is going to happen this year, Steve?
We're going to watch MotoGP. We're going to chat about it. It's going to be fucking fabulous.
That's probably the most accurate that these predictions are about to get, Steve. I'm going to throw a prediction at you. You've got the list in front of you as well, so let's work through it like this. I'll throw the first one at you. We'll chat back and forth. One of us will probably disagree with the other. You can throw the second one at me, third at you, fourth at me. You get the drift.
I'm all over it.
Okay, so I've got the nice one here, Steve. Who's going to be world champion?
Morbidelli.
Oof, straight away. No even thinking about it. Morbidelli on a two-year-old Yamaha.
Yeah.
Wow, you're not even blinking. You are. That is the face of a man that is confident. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think I do know why. I just believe that with all the improvements he made last year, I think he's been calculated in like his approach to how he's coming to MotoGP. And I think like just having Valentino alongside him, who we know is his good friend,
mm-hmm.
and obviously lovely time world champion. He's got the full backing of the team now. I think they're going to push equally within that team for Morbidelli to be at the forefront whenever they can. I don't think there'll be any team orders. And it will just, I just think it's going to be Morbidelli's year.
And I can't argue with a lot of what you've just said, to be fair. I think very quickly, I think if Rossi came out of the blocks and won 3 out of 4 races and was leading the championship, then I think the team focus would be on him very quickly. And I think he would make sure it was. However, I think probably for the first time in Valentino Rossi's career, if his teammate comes out of the blocks and wins 3 out of 4, he will be 100% backing his teammate.
Yeah.
I think he would 100% back Franco Morbidelli. My only issue with that is I'm still not sure, even though we discussed earlier in the show about how we're in this era where satellite teams or independent teams can be as potent as the factory squad. And we saw that, like, to be fair, last year with Yamaha winning 7 races out of the 14, and 6 of those race wins were from the Petronas Sepang racing team.
Right.
But I'm not convinced that just because it happens within a factory, within one team, just because it happens within Yamaha, for example, I'm not convinced the independent Yamaha team can go and beat all of the other factory teams. I'm sort of erring on, if Marc Marquez isn't back for round one, I think Rins might be champion this year. I think Rins got the kick up the arse he needed to stop fucking crashing when Mir won the championship. And I think now Rins will go, whoa, consistency. If Marquez isn't here, it doesn't have to be do or die. It's just got to be stay in the top 4 every single race. And I think Rins is more than capable of that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would honestly say I'm going to keep with my prediction of Morbidelli, but I think Rins will be the only real fly in the ointment. I think everything else will align. You know, Marquez might not be back. Poles on a new bike. Vinales never going to be champion. Quartararo moving up to the factory team. We saw what happened with him last year, and I think it's going to be a repeat performance. I think it really only boils down to 2 riders.
Or 3, because Mir is certainly in the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And I think Miller is probably in the conversation.
I think they're all about... This is the trouble. They're all across the board. There's so many that in with a shout.
It's funny, without the Marc Marquez figure that's clearly the favourite, all of a sudden we're like, you could make an argument probably for 8 guys to be winning the championship.
Easy. But I think over the course of the season, I think looking at previous results and what's happened this year with movers and moving teams a little bit, I think there's just combinations of little things that are going to lead to a few mistakes and a few bad results for a few riders. And I think ultimately, the ones that have been on the machine the longest, got to grips with it, and made the most improvements over the last few years are going to be the ones that really have the base plate this year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, to be fair. Obviously, if Marc Marquez comes back in round one, I think that puts a fly in the ointment, because I think Marquez could come back, compete. Say we have a 19-race championship this year. I think Marc Marquez could come back and spend 6 rounds to get up to speed, maybe 8 rounds to get up to full fitness and speed, and still win the title on the back of 10 good rounds.
Exactly. I think, and if he comes back, say he comes back round one, he is just going to put the fear of God into everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
We said it last podcast. Yeah, he's going to walk onto the track, helmet bag in hand, and everyone else is going to go, for fuck's sake. Because they don't know. He's an unknown element now of what he's going to be like. And it's that unknown, it's fear of the unknown. Is he going to come out? Is he going to be the old Marquez? Is he going to be the bull in the china shop wanting to prove himself? Or is he going to be this relaxed, progressive Marquez who's going to build up?
And there's going to be guys that have never really raced against Marquez before. Obviously, Brad Binder hasn't properly raced against Marquez before.
No.
You could say that although Oliveira raced an entire year against him, they were at very different ends of the grid last year.
Exactly.
In 2019, sorry.
They were miles apart.
Yeah, whereas now the guys that are race winners, all of a sudden, Quartararo will be one of the only guys that's raced Marquez, properly raced Marquez.
Exactly.
And obviously there's the Vinales there. There is a few guys that have. But it's going to be, Marquez is the fly in the ointment. And I think if Marquez comes back, if Marquez is back in round one, sort of my money's going to go on him. A couple of weeks ago, Steve, I said on the show, I'm pretty sure I said that, no, I can't see Marquez winning the title this year. However, if Marquez is back in round one, it doesn't matter if he's back at full fitness or not. As long as he's scoring points, you cannot discount him. He's certainly in the conversation.
No.
If he's back after 4 or 5 rounds, I think you can kind of discount him. But I don't know. Marquez is the problem, because without Marquez, my money's on Rins. Morbidelli, like you say, is certainly in the conversation, and I think Morbidelli will be finishing top Yamaha no matter what.
Oh god, yeah, absolutely. I'm just having a quick look on social media. Like Marquez is posting more and more workout videos all the time.
And they went quiet for a little while, didn't they?
They did go quiet, but all of a sudden it's kicking off. Like, the first one, he's on a yoga ball and he's holding weights out. Like he's leaning on the yoga ball on his chest. And then he's got dumbbells in his hands. He's holding them out. So he's clearly strengthening himself up. And he's like getting his arm worked on. It's just a lot of teasing, and all this is going to work to his advantage because he'd be getting in the heads of everyone else.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's that those pictures aren't for you and I. They're not for the media. They're not even for Honda. They're for the competition. That's him saying, "I'm fucking ready, lads. Let's go."
Yeah, I'm coming. I'm ready.
Yeah.
So, mind games.
Quite.
I like it. I like it.
It's just it's fun to talk about. I quite like when it comes to MotoGP, just talk about what could happen. And this is why this show is one of my favorites, because it's what could happen. And you go through all the mental scenarios that could take place, and they're just fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've got like a list of 2, 4, 6, 7 questions here. Those 7 questions got potential to fill 7 shows.
Well, that's a fair point, but they're not going to, Steve, because we don't have 7 shows before the start of the season.
We don't. So with that in mind, Rookie of the Year, Tim.
I'm still pretty stuck on this, man. I can make arguments for all 3 of them.
Exactly.
But we're talking about Jorge Martin, we're talking about Andrea Bastianini, and we're talking about Luca Marini. There are 3 rookies. One name, Steve. I know these. I've been thinking about these questions for a long time and haven't been able to come up with answers. And even now, you've put it to me and I'm still just chatting shit, trying to think of an answer. I'm trying to buy myself time. So I'm going to have to put my money down on... Luca Marini, I'm going to do it, because Luca Marini has got the support base of people who have ridden the Ducati. He's got the support base of VR46. He's got Pecco Bagnaia, who rode that exact bike last year, who he trains with all of the time. So I think it's probably going to be Luca Marini, or is it going to be Andrea Bastianini? Fuck.
It's awful, isn't it?
God, it is. It's Luca Marini. I'm going with Luca Marini, and I'm going to stick to it because I think he's got so much support that the VR46 squad are going to make sure he makes a success of it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And this is only because I don't think Jorge Martin is going to have a very good first year. When we went through his show of his career up until this point, we kind of established that his first year in a class is shit. And I think this is going to be the same.
It does have that trait where the first year is a very much a learning curve.
Yeah, certainly. And I think Andrea Bastianini is going to be quite similar. I think they're all going to struggle on the Ducati in their first year.
So,
but I think the fact that Bastianini and Marini are riding a GP20 as opposed to a GP21, they're on a year-old machine. And it's a year-old machine that has been ridden by members of the VR46 Academy, which is why I think he's probably going to do okay. I think it'll be Luca Marini, but I think it's going to be tight.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree.
Okay, so let's keep moving from there, Steve. Who is going to be the team champion? This isn't manufacturer, this is team champion.
I think it's kind of a tough one as well. I would probably go Yamaha. Oh, not...
Monster Yamaha.
Monster or Yamaha, Yamaha. I can't choose between the two. I think... potentially Petronas.
You reckon Petronas? That it makes a lot of sense. To be fair, Petronas probably would have done it
last year
if they weren't docked points for the dodgy valves. So
I think Rossi's fairly consistent. Morbidelli's pretty damn consistent. And judging just simply looking at last year's form, I think this year Morbidelli's going to have a bit more incentive to finish higher in the standings and more consistently. Rossi's going to have a point to prove. I just think the two together is just going to bag them enough points just to nick it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm a little undecided. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Suzuki, though. I can see Suzuki being a very consistent pairing this year again. So for the team championship, I can kind of... Suzuki also really depends on what effect not having Davide Brivio has on the team.
That is a really, really hard one.
Yeah.
That is a very, very hard one. There's, again, we could argue for all of them, but I honestly think there's only going to be like one or two points separating all these guys.
It's going to be tight, isn't it? Certainly between the teams. I don't think it's going to be a Ducati team because there's so many rookies. Whether they're not rookies to the class, they're rookies to those teams. I mean, literally every single Ducati bike has got a new rider on this year. So I don't think it's going to be a Ducati team.
No, there's too much inexperience coming into Ducati.
Yeah, and I don't know if it can be Petronas because I'm not convinced Rossi is consistent enough anymore.
I don't know. It's so, so tough. Because we've seen people like Rossi change teams before, then actually have better results. But at the same time, like you say, Suzuki, Rins is going to be on absolute charge. It doesn't matter what Mir says. He's going to have a point to prove.
Oh, so I mean, Mir is 100%, like, the target is on his back. Mir is the guy to beat this year.
Oh, yeah, it don't even matter if he is at the back of the grid. He could be riding around 22nd. He's still going to have a target on his back, and everyone's going to try and lap him.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're riding around in 23rd, you're going to be stoked to overtake the world champion.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have to stick with Petronas. I think they're going to nick it just.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Suzuki. That's where my money's going to be.
You're probably right, to be fair. No, I'm going to stick with it. Petronas.
I'm going to have to be writing these down, Steve. Let me just start again so I can write these down. World champion Tim says it's going to be Rins. Steve says it's going to be Morbidelli. Morbidelli. He's never going to talk to me again after this, Steve. I didn't say it was going to be him. Rookie of the year, Tim says Marini. Did you agree? I think you did.
I did agree, yeah, Marini.
Steve agrees. And then team championship. This way we can actually go through and do a recap show at the end of the year, Steve.
Yes, that's a good idea. I like a recap show as well, or end of season show, because it's just like a what the fuck did we just see show.
An end of season show is fun. That they weren't not even words. End of season show is fun as well. You're right. I do like an end of season show, yeah, too.
This is the build up. That's the post-coital having a fag.
You're right. This is the foreplay. Yeah, and you're right. The post-season show is the just chilling in your own little, like, oh my God, I feel a bit zen and I'm a bit confused as to why things feel this great. But you're right. You're sitting, chilling, having a cigarette, maybe a beer if you're lucky.
I will definitely have a beer at the end of the season.
I thought you meant a post-coital beer then. I was like, whoa, this is taking a turn. where are we, Steve? That was that. That's team championships. I've said Suzuki. You've said Petronas.
Yes. So, next question to you, my man. Independent teams championship.
Ooh, okay. Independent team champions. So, okay. I meant to put an extra one in here because I wanted a rider and team championship for this. So, my independent rider is Morbidelli.
Yes.
My independent team is actually going to be Petronas.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree on both.
Okay, happy days. That's easy enough. We don't need to worry about any more conversation on that because I think we kind of covered it in the last 3 points.
Yep, shot that one straight down.
Okay, so then, Steve, manufacturer championship.
I think on the whole over the season, just for sheer numbers, that could be pipped by Ducati again.
I am sort of with you. I'm kind of going on the Ducati just because they've got the numbers. It's a weird one, the manufacturer's points, we know, but if you've got six bikes on the grid, chances are one of them's going to score high every race.
Exactly. I just don't see numbers. I think it would be hard to argue against it, unless something really bad happens, and we know there's a lot of rookies in there, so it's got potential to not happen, but...
That's a really good point. And we have this, like we mentioned previously, like Ducati won the manufacturer championship in 2007.
Yeah.
And then they didn't win it again until this year. And they've had more bikes on the grid than everyone else for quite a long time, actually. So maybe it's not as likely as we think. But my money is on Ducati, but I'm already questioning myself.
I think it will be Ducati just because... The amount of improvement they've made just as a team, on the whole, since 2007, you know, they've come a long, long way.
Mm-hmm.
What they can offer a rider, even a rookie, is so much more appealing now. And you've got the, even straight out of the box, that bike's got the ability to do so much more than what it ever has done before.
And even a one-year-old Ducati isn't really like, would have been 5 years ago. It's not the if you were to be told, oh, you've got a one-year-old Ducati just for this year, you'd still be like, oh, I can probably get points. I mean, I maybe could get a podium on this.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not as bleak as what it has been in the past.
Mm, certainly.
Mm. Yeah, Ducati.
Yes, all right. We're both sticking with Ducati, Steve. Let's go with that one. So that brings us then on to the following one. That is, will Rossi win a race this year, Steve?
I was going to engage Jekyll and Hyde mode. Fanboy says yes, reality says no.
So what should we be going with? Are we going with fanboy or are we going with reality?
Reality.
You're going to go for the no. I'm actually going to go with the fanboy because I'd just love to see it. I just hope. And part of me thinks that if he does it, if he pulls it off and he manages to sneak a weird win out of nowhere, he's just going to mic drop retire on us all. Even if it's, and we were chatting in the, again, not a plug, but we were chatting in the Facebook group with some people about this. And, it was this fun. Oh, imagine if he could win a championship. Wouldn't that be great? He could just mic drop us all. And I was saying, I was like, that's what I wanted to see in 2015. I wanted to see him win it, mic drop, retire. I'd love to see Rossi win a race, go on the podium, celebrate, and then in the post-race press conference, just be like, yeah, I'm retiring this year.
Yeah,
I've done it. I've done it. And that would be in, if he didn't get another podium up until that point, if he could get a win, that would be his 200th podium and his 100 and something win and just mic drop retire. That would maybe, how good would it be if he just went, I'm going to retire from literally now and just walked away forever.
The hearts he would break.
But would it not be the ultimate ending to the career? I feel like it would secure his legacy forever.
It would be worse than when Boyzone broke up.
I was just taking a swig and I very nearly spat it out everywhere, Steve.
Oh, I thought I'd drop that in there for you.
Oh, that was good timing as well. But yeah, you're right. It would be that kind of, but it would be grown men crying.
It would, you know, if you're a little kid, your dad's suddenly going to go run upstairs and like be sobbing into his pillow.
Are you preparing for what your kids are going to have to witness?
Mate, you should see the tissues I've got lined up.
That would be a creepy statement if we weren't talking about crying.
It would. And what's happening already? Look, I'm already cuddling my toy dinosaur.
A Triceratops, actually, as it turns out.
It is a Triceratops. just, you know, I'm consoling myself over here in my little, you know.
Does the Triceratops have a name?
I'm not sure. It's Enzo's. He's clearly forgotten it.
Oh, okay. Well, we need to find out its name.
All right. Terry.
Terry the Triceratops. I like it. Yeah. We can go with that.
We're going with Terry. A lot of imagination comes out.
And then our final one, Steve. We've fallen off the rails of who's doing what, asking the questions here, so I'm just going to roll with it. When, if at all, will we see Marc Marquez back, Steve? I don't want an exact date here. Just give me a round.
I think, personally, round two.
Round two? You really think it'll be round two?
Yeah. I think he'll come back for Qatar 1. From what we're seeing on social media, the amount of training he's doing, he's obviously gearing up for it.
That's fair.
I think he'll use that opportunity to come back and just see how things go on the Friday. Very much like we saw him the weekend after his crash and all.
Ah, that's a good shout.
I think he'll come and just survey the land, see how he gets on. And no pressure. It's Friday. It's a test. You know, just come and see how you feel. And then if he feels all right, do a few laps at race speed and see how he gets on. And just tentatively work himself in.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like that idea. I'm not convinced it will be round two, though, because I think if he's going to come back at Qatar, he'll just come back for round one. He'll just come back, and even if he finishes 15th, he's going to score a point, and that's important. I don't think it'll be round one or two. I don't think it'll be round three, because that's Portugal, and he's never ridden at Portugal.
No.
Will it be round four in Jerez? I mean, we know he's pretty good round Jerez, but we also know that Fabio Quartararo is very good around Jerez. Arguably, it would depend, wouldn't it? Because I could see him coming back at Sachsenring, which is what, round 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? But that's throwing away the championship by that point, I think. Yeah. But Sachsenring's almost a guaranteed win, so maybe he wants to be fit before Sachsenring. I don't know. I'm going to say round 5.
Right here.
Yeah, I'm going round 5 is when he's going to be back.
Come on, round 2.
Which is, round 5 is Le Mans.
Yeah.
So maybe he'll, maybe he won't. I don't know. I'm going round 5. That's what we're going to stick with.
Oh. But after all those questions, this is, what do you think? At home, let us know.
Yes, please do let us know, because you've seen what we've been asking here. Who do you think is going to be world champion? Who do you think is going to be rookie of the year? Who do you think is going to be the team champions? Who's going to be the independent team champions? Who's going to be manufacturer champions? Will Rossi win away a race? You went a bit Jonathan Woss on us all there.
He did go a bit Jonathan Woss.
Which I think might be a joke that's lost on every listener outside of the UK, actually.
I just realised that, actually. That's just yeah. For anyone who doesn't know who Jonathan Woss is, Google him, look him up, YouTube him, because he's a British TV...
He's just a talk show host with a speech impediment.
Yeah, but he's funny as hell.
He is quite a funny chap. And when, if at all, will we see Marc Marquez back, guys? Just jump in and let us know. You know where to find us at this point. We'll run through all of those where you can find us at the end of the show. But the best place is the Facebook group. It's the For Love of MotoGP community page. So come join us there, answer the questions. Steve, we are running longer than I expected for today's show, actually.
We are, actually. I then looked at the time and was like, whoa.
Yeah, but let's go through the teams and who we think will finish highest in their respective team, shall we?
Let's do it.
Should be quite a quick one. So Repsol Honda, Steve, this is the confusing one straight away.
Yeah, this one's slightly awkward.
This is the, if Marc Marquez doesn't return straight away, who finishes higher, Stefan Bradl or Pol Espargaro?
Pol.
Pol, I think I agree with you, but I think he will get there towards the end of the season. I don't think he's going to be up to speed at the start of the season. However, if Marc Marquez is there, Steve, who finishes on top?
Marquez.
Marquez, again, might not be up to speed at the start of the season, but will certainly be by the end of the season.
I think both scenarios will be a slow burn and go right down to the wire.
Yep, I'm with you completely. LCR Honda, Alex Marquez, Taka Nakagami, who finishes on top here?
Taka.
Ooh, I'm going Alex, actually. I think Alex Marquez is going to finish on top on this one. I think he already showed last year. He's fast. He scored 2 podiums. Taka scored none.
No, but I think that will be the fire that Taka needs.
Mm.
Light his rocket.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And maybe that Aragon. Maybe that Aragon situation where he should have won that race. He scored pole, he was fast, and he crashed out. And he has trained extensively to get that out of his system. Maybe that will work and maybe he will be faster. But I'm quite convinced of Alex Marquez on that Colgate bike.
Oh, don't.
Monster Yamaha, this is an interesting one, Steve. Who's going to finish on top? Will it be Fabio Quartararo? Will it be Maverick Viñales?
Kevin Schwantz.
Yep, I'm straight-faced. You're really rolling with the Kevin Schwantz here. It's a tough one, isn't it, this?
This is a real tough one. I've been looking at this for a while, actually. I've scrolled down the page. I've been sort of looking at it. Honestly, I don't know. But I think in my head... I'm going to go Quartararo.
Yeah, I'm going Quartararo because although I think he's also a fragile rider, I think on his good days, he's faster than Viñales. I don't think either one of them has more good days than the other, judging by last year. But I think on his good days, Fabio is a little bit faster than Maverick on Maverick's good days.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Patronus SRT, PSRT, Frankie Morbidelli or Valentino Rossi, Steve?
Morbidelli.
Morbidelli, yeah, I'm with you completely. That was almost a heart versus head scenario there. I was waiting for you to say Rossi. I was like, but Steve, you've already told me that you think Morbidelli is going to win the title.
Yeah, that little grunt was fighting back the fanboy.
I'm very impressed at the way you pulled it off.
Just bash the fucker down, get back in your box.
Let's keep going through Ducati. Jack Miller or Pecco Bagnaia?
Miller.
Miller, yep, I'm with you completely. I'm not convinced Pecco Bagnaia is going to finish in the top 10, actually.
No, I think he's going to have a bit of a season.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a rough year. I hope he doesn't. I hope he drastically improves on last year, but I don't actually think he's ready for the big red bike.
No, I completely agree with you.
So that brings us to Pramac Ducati with Johann Zarco and Jorge Martin. I think Zarco is going to finish ahead of Martin. I also would not be surprised if Zarco is the top Ducati. If he's not top Ducati, he will only be second Ducati behind Jack Miller.
Absolutely agree.
That
easy one.
100%. Yeah, wasn't he? I expected you to say more. I was a bit lost when you didn't actually. No. When you just agreed.
Yeah, I realised that. We both had a sudden pause. Like, yeah. No, absolutely. I couldn't. Yeah, my words exactly.
Good stuff. Okay, Avintia Ducati / VR46. That gives us Enea Bastianini and Luca Marini, both riding GP20, so year-old Ducatis. I'm with Marini to finish on top here.
Yeah, I think it'll be close, but I think it'll be Marini.
Yep. Suzuki then. Alex Rins versus Johan Mir.
This season, Rins.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Rins. I actually... it's funny because as we've gone through this show, I realise how much I'm not expecting Mir to perform this year. If yeah. Mir comes out and just blasts 5 or 6 race wins, part of me wouldn't be surprised. But the other part of me would be blown away that he's done it. Because I expect him to win a race. I expect him to score a lot of podiums. But I don't expect him to be... I don't actually expect him to finish in the top three. Which is weird, no. Considering he's the champion.
Yeah, I think his competition is going to be a lot stiffer this year. Mm-hmm. It was only his consistency last year that got him where he did. And a lot of that consistency was relying on other people's failure.
But arguably, he should have won more than one race. He should have won one of those races at Austria that were red flagged. I don't know. I think he had worse results last year than he deserved.
Aye.
I'm also kind of, I don't know. I can't see him finishing in the top three. It's a weird one with Mir because he's an amazing rider. We know that. Aye. But maybe he'll come out all guns blazing and realize he's not going to try and third place his way to the championship because it's too early in the season. He has to go out and win races.
Aye. Rins, got to be Rins.
Yeah, I'm still with Rins, though. Even after that spiel, I'm still with Rins.
Yeah, it's got to be Rins.
We'll go with Rins.
Let's do it. Yeah, move on quick before I change my mind.
Okay, Aprilia then. We'll end it with Aprilia on these ones. Alessio Spargaro or Lorenzo Savadori, assuming it's going to be Lorenzo Savadori on that bike, which we kind of think it will be at this point.
I think it will be. Alessio.
Yeah.
Just through sheer damn experience, and he's still a damn good rider.
Exactly. It can't be anyone but Aleix at this point, I don't think. Steve, right. That kind of brings us to the end of our prediction show.
We are getting there.
We're getting there slowly now. Slowly, quickly now, actually. We've just got a couple more bits and we're done. Guys, we had a few of you ask via email and via Facebook message and things about if we'll be doing a fantasy league this year. And yes, we will be. We certainly will be. We are hoping, and I've been checking daily to see whether the MotoGP Fantasy League is up and running and ready to go. I mean, I've had emails about it, and I've replied to those emails and not heard anything. But hopefully, yes. Well, we certainly will be. If MotoGP don't pull their finger out and get their one up and running, I think, Steve, we'll have a look at something like Sportsdeck and see if they're running another MotoGP league this year.
Yeah, we'll definitely do something. We'll find one somewhere. I did just click onto the MotoGP one. It's still the
2020 stuff, isn't it? But they sent a lot of questionnaires and stuff. So they are certainly, they certainly appeared to be doing one. And we will be signing up for it as soon as they do. And we will let you all know. We will share it on the Facebook group, the Facebook page. We'll share it across all of our social media. And it'll be in the show notes for every episode as well, guys. So bear with us. We will have another league set up. And we will definitely be doing prizes this year. We didn't do prizes last year, which we can only really apologise for. But we certainly will be this year. So, guys, get involved. Come and join us for that as soon as we can. But we'll tell you more about it as we go.
It's like disappointing they haven't done it yet. I keep checking. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I keep thinking that. Kind of, it got rolled around. I do the podcast notes, as you know. Like, well, we'll ping notes back and forth to each other, but we kind of put the finalized notes together on a Tuesday morning, normally ready to record Tuesday afternoon. And I always check before I send you the finalized notes. I'm always like, right, just check the fantasy page. Oh, still nothing.
Yeah, I think they could have been hanging out to see what happens with COVID in Qatar.
I think that's probably bang on. And part of me thinks they'll wait till after testing. To be fair, it's probably not a priority. Well, it's definitely not a priority for Dorna. How much money do they make from the Fantasy League? Not a lot. So
probably.
You can see why they're not that fussed. But it's a fun thing that we all like getting involved with. So yes, we will be doing one. And we will let you guys know about it as soon as possible.
Oh, absolutely.
Where are we? We had an interesting voice message come in, Steve, via Instagram.
We did.
As you guys know, we recorded on Monday our... oh, shit. I meant to start... Funny. So we recorded our show, our introduction to MotoGP, which we released to you guys on Monday. It was released to the world. And I actually have to admit, Steve, that I meant to start every single show since then with and if you've never watched MotoGP... Go and listen to our introduction to MotoGP. It'll tell you everything you need to know. But I forgot about that plug.
We'll put it at the end of this one, and we'll do it on the start of every other one.
We'll try and do it at the start of everyone. This might be like you forgetting the email address, Steve. It might just be something I constantly forget, and I'll need you to jump in and fix for me. but we can roll with that. But anyway, we released that show, as some of you will know. And for those who listened all the way to the end, you will know I was slaughtered by the end of it. Slaughtered to the point that I literally could not say the name of the podcast. It was an interesting show to record, and I edited it, and it cringed me out so much that I don't really want to think about it. But I think from the feedback we've already had, it was a fun show.
It was a fun show. That was a longie, but it was hilarious.
Yeah, it was a longie. That was almost a 3-hour show by the time it was done, mate. It was a big one. We're hitting Dan Carlin podcast territory at this point.
Oof.
We're not hitting Dan Carlin. I'm not going to record a 6-hour epic.
Jesus, they're like one of those graphic novel equivalent of that, a very long book.
Yeah, quite.
Jesus, 6 hours.
Yeah, Dan Carlin, Hardcore History, great podcast, actually. Really good if you've got 6 hours to kill. There's one of them, it's the Blueprint for Armageddon series, banging, all about World War One, but it's 5 6-hour episodes.
My God.
So it's like a 30-hour episode. It was great for me when I was working nights and not talking to anyone, because I just listened to a lot of those. That's not what we're talking about, Steve. We're talking about the introduction to MotoGP show. Yeah. Which involved us talking about exhausts.
It did.
And it involved us talking about, and I'll say it again, Akrapovic for exhausts.
Just fell off a chair laughing.
Yeah. They are exhaust manufacturers who make a lot of high-end sports exhausts. And I've kind of always seen it. It's always been Akrapovic. I've never really thought anything about it. But we had a voice message on Instagram, and thank you very, very much for your message. I actually won't name drop you because you didn't tell us we could or whether we should, so I won't. But I was corrected very quickly that it's Akrapovic. In fact, Akrapovic, not Akrapovic. So I made a bit of an error, and I really hope I've said it right this time, because otherwise we're going to get another message and I'll be told it's wrong again. But to correct myself, because I talk a lot, and part of being able to talk a lot in my own head is being allowed to talk a lot in my own head is the fact that I'm happy to correct myself when I'm wrong.
So absolutely.
It's not Akrapovic, it's Akrapovic. And if I'm wrong again, please get in touch and let me know.
I put two O's in Akrapovic.
Akrapovic. Oh, you say Akrapovic. Yeah. It's not Akrapovic, is it?
I have no idea.
It's Akrapovic, I think.
I think it's Akrapovic. Okay. We were corrected by someone who knew that it was a Slovenian company.
Slovenian, I think.
Slovenian company. And just basically fluent. Yes, we got the message and I was like, oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're quite embarrassed. And actually, in I can't use it in my defense, can I? No, I'm not. But there is an accent over the C that we don't actually see in English writing because we don't have accents over our letters. However, we also don't know what those accents mean. So when we do see the accents, it's sort of irrelevant, and we just say words as if they weren't there anyway.
We just
welcome to
them.
Being English.
We just ignore that there's an accent over that. What does that mean? I mean, just put your thumb over it and pretend it's not there.
That's pretty much, yes, colonialism, Steve. That covers it. That's what it is all about being English, sadly. We'll keep moving on here. We had an email from George. I haven't actually properly read the email yet, George, but it did have a lot of pictures of indie cars. So thank you very much for that. It literally came through as we were recording. I will have a proper look at that as soon as we're done recording. So thank you very much, I think. I assume you haven't said anything
since
horrible.
Since we've been recording, we've had quite a bit of interaction. We've also had a little interaction on YouTube.
Oh, that's a treat. We'll be diving into that later then and talking about that maybe next week if it was nice.
Nice little comment by the looks of it.
Good stuff. And then we're pretty much there, I think, Steve.
I think we are there, buddy.
Good stuff. So, guys, if you agree or disagree with our predictions, if you have anything else you want to say to us, any questions for us, please do get in touch. And you can find us on...
We are For the Love of MotoGP. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter, or come and join us on the Facebook group. It's good over there. We have a fun time. Or drop us an email. We are For the Love of MotoGP @gmail.com.
Boom. First time, Steve.
Nailed it.
Very impressed. We actually, Steve, on the Facebook group, we missed your Monday moan this week.
We did. I apologise for that. And Tuesday trivia as well.
And the Tuesday trivia.
I've gone back to work this week. I just wanted to see this one. I did actually forget to put out a comment as well. I was going to say, like, I'm just going back to work and to see how I get on, whether I can work it in with like a break. Couldn't do it.
No, that's fair enough. It's quite a shock to the system, right? How long is it since you've been at work?
I've stopped work for Sarah's treatment middle of December. And now she's better. Slightly COVID related. She was having hospital treatment. So we couldn't go anywhere and risk it, so I had to be off work. So yeah, I think it was second week of December, and I started back on the 1st of March.
So there you go, nearly quarter of a year, more than quarter of a year, in fact.
Yes,
that's quite a shock to the system, man.
It was a shock to the system, but good to be back. It symbolizes that Sarah's better and everything's on the mend.
Exactly.
I might as well tell everyone. We did speak about it last week. We sort of discussed whether I was going to tell everyone what happened, but I might as well. It's good news, so I'll tell everyone. Unfortunately, back in August of last year, Sarah was diagnosed with breast cancer. But fortunately, she has absolutely kicked its ass. After a course of chemo and one operation, she's better. It's all gone. So we're very happy and pleased with that. And unfortunately, means I've got to go back to work.
Unfortunately. Or Steve. But you guys will know that Steve and I say Steve and I, Steve walked the Norfolk Coast Path to raise some money for this last year. I tried to walk it with him and got 2 days in and then injured my entire leg. So had to stop. But Steve ploughed on regardless. We only spent one night together under canvas. But Steve managed it, and it was a good one. And
it was a good one
to raise money for this.
Hopefully, depending on what COVID does, we might talk about doing something later this year, maybe. Do something else. Put a bit more planning into this one.
Yeah, certainly. Well, it doesn't need to be that well planned. I'm certainly just up for a long walk most of the time, Steve. Not on sand this time. The Norfolk Coast Path spent a lot of time on the beach. I think that's what hurt me.
Mate, my feet. I'll show you some of the...
Your boots that had no padding in, as it turns out.
Oh, mate, they fell apart.
Very quickly.
Like, yeah, literally day one. It's like, where are my boots gone?
That's it. Right, anyway, guys, before we end this show, I was reading an article on therace.com. I understand right now that most of you think that I have an affiliate deal with The Race. I clearly do not have an affiliate deal with The Race.
I think we might have to get in touch with them and say, look, here, lads.
Be like, Simon, we've been plugging your fucking show loads. Come back on ours and have a chat with us.
Yeah. Actually, but what was that? Over a year ago we had him on.
It was in the run-up to the 2020 season, or was it... Did we not even know the season was cancelled yet? I don't think we did we?
I don't think we did. I think it was like a couple of weeks, maybe about this time.
Although I think I remember on that show telling Simon I was convinced Alex Marquez was going to get a podium, and he told me that he wouldn't. So, you know, who's the fucking expert now? But yes, dear. It was an interesting show about Pramac riders and who has come through the Pramac squad. So I will also link that in the show notes. Very worth a read, I think. That's pretty much us, guys. So remember, guys, come and join our Facebook group. Steve's done all the plug-in, and I'm going to do it one more time. Come and join our Facebook group. Have a chat. There's still not many people in there. It's been growing week on week, slowly. A person a day. So there's not a lot. You're not going to come and join a group with 1,000 people. You'll come and join a group of a very select few, but a very select few chatty people. It's been great fun so far. Come and join us. Unless you're a dick, and then we don't want you. Just saying.
Just come along. It's a fun group. Everyone's really friendly. Everyone's really nice. And it's just MotoGP orientated. Or not even that. Generally, people are just chatting.
Just motorbikes, actually. Yeah. There's just been a lot of motorbikes chat, which has been good. We've got one chap who's even got an entire corner of his apartment devoted to his motorbike. And that I can get behind.
That I can get behind. I mean, Bert has lived in the living room before, which I quite enjoyed.
I've seen pictures of Bert in your living room before.
I'll post a picture of Bert in my living room.
Yeah, they into the Facebook group, which you'll have to join to see the picture.
Oh, look at that. Look where we went with that. Thank you very much.
Anyway, Steve, that's enough of our shameless self-promotion now. That'll do us for this week. Guys, thank you very much for listening. It has been wonderful, as always, guys. So remember, in this time that we're living in, stay safe and look after each other. Elbow bumps, fist bumps, no handshakes, guys. Remember, mask it or casket. We'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.